you say something that might hit for you tonight. So, so here we go. So, hi everybody, I'm Summer. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Summer.
I'm grateful to be in recovery for today on this day. That's the greatest lesson that I have in my life today, is that I woke up this morning and I didn't have to hate myself based on anything that I did yesterday. And I've got a pretty good shot, given the crowd I'm with and the place I am, that I won't have to do that tomorrow morning either. And that, for me, is an absolute miracle in my life. I came to Overeaters Anonymous through the beverage program. I had a little bit of time over there. And because I had a little bit of time over there, I was not aware that I had any other problems than a beverage problem. In fact, over there they told me that if I just paid attention to the beverage problem, everything in my life would work out just fine. And for a long time it did. I come from a long line of bootstrappers. And so I became very, very, very good at exercising my exceptionally strong willpower in my life. And so I'll just back up a little bit. I was, like most of us in this room, I was born a very small child. about average size, to average parents in an average town. I didn't know that I was born with this hole in my soul with the wind blowing, and neither did the people around me. And I remember as a kid doing everything I possibly could to escape my reality. I remember stealing food and hiding food and hoarding food. I remember swiping huge bags of candy and eating all of them and wondering how I was going to get rid of the wrappers. You see, when I was a child that was abandoned, when I was 4 years old, my father became critically ill, and my parents left me with my grandmother, and my grandmother was not happy about that. And so she made an agreement that she would clothe me and she would feed me, and that was it. And so I was kind of dropped off that cliff of nurturing to, essential need management, right? And so I was a kid that just always had this need and this need that couldn't be met. And I believe that that's when I really started using food to change my reality. My grandmother would set up a breakfast for me, and I would wake up and I would go to the kitchen table by myself. And I would sit at the kitchen table and pour my glass of milk over my little box of cereal. And I would eat that cereal. And then I would be by myself. And I would go through the cupboards in the house and I would look for any kind of food that I could eat. And I would eat and eat and eat. And what I really wanted to do was cook pasta. But I knew that I couldn't cook pasta on the stove, and so I spent most of my days with a juice glass filled with water trying to heat it up on the heater vent, trying to cook my pasta. So one of my favorite things still today is pasta. But I knew that if I could get that food in me, that maybe it would fill that hole in my soul with the wind blowing through, that bottomless God bucket. Bottomless love bucket. And I believed everything the adults told me. And so my great-grandmother came to visit. She was English, and she said, "Darling, if you don't begin to eat, you're going to dry up and blow away." And by God, I was like, that's the ticket. I began to eat everything I possibly could. People in my family would like cut the meat off of their meat and push it aside, right? Because I come from a long line of body shamers. And I would eat that fat because I was terrified. To me, the absolute worst thing that could possibly happen to a human being would be to dry up and blow away. And so I think I can do my clicker, actually. I'm getting good at this. I'm this two-handed well. Thing. Okay. So it was kind of how it was for me. I ate as much as I possibly could, but I was not an overweight child. I was kind of a long and lithe child. All of my mother dieted and my grandmother dieted, and they all watched their weight very closely, and I just must have had a good metabolism because nobody noticed what I was doing. But when I was in fourth grade, that grandma died. And I remember stealing a bag of Mars bars and hiding downstairs inside the rollaway bed, which is not an easy thing to do when it's folded up. Making a cave for myself and getting in that cave where I was squoze in and just eating that entire bag of candy bars. And then came the next thing. I realized that maybe my stomach was bigger than the girl next to me. And so in fourth grade, I started doing compulsively exercising and compulsively doing sit-ups because I thought maybe if I could just do enough sit-ups, I would matter. Maybe if I could just do enough sit-ups, I could be seen. By the time I was in eighth grade, I should say along this period, my family is really just a bunch of kids of abandonment all thrown together to survive. And so we did all kinds of stuff in order to survive that weren't necessarily healthy. And by the time I was in eighth grade, I decided that I needed to choose a different method of filling that hole in my soul with the wind blowing through. And so I quit eating and I started drinking. And I came into recovery from that at the age of 25. And almost immediately started eating. Funny how that is, huh? Almost immediately started eating, and I didn't know it. I didn't know that I was creeping back into that hole in the sidewalk that I kept stepping into, you know? I didn't know that the disease of compulsive overeating was surrounding me, and it was as invisible to me as water is to fish. I didn't know that I was creeping further and further and further toward, or maybe past, that invisible line, that line of no return, that place where I could no longer, I passed the point of being able to control my eating. But I tried everything I possibly could. I made a list of some of the things I have tried because I found it kind of amazing if you sit down and look at it. Oh my gosh, Sunny. So, here are some of the methods I have tried. I had multiple surgeries. I had multiple surgeries that I knew if I had this surgery, they told me I might accidentally lose weight as a result. So I had parts of my body cut out of me so that I might lose weight. That included a hysterectomy and having my gallbladder removed, both of which I've paid dearly for. I did Weight Watchers, Body for Life. I did more cardio. I did less cardio. I did bodybuilding. I did energy work and massage. I sought out the gentleman from the Swan, which was a body transformation program, and I did his eating program for a number of years. I did high protein. I did no protein. I was vegan. I was vegetarian. I was low carb. I did Brightline. I did Metafast. I followed Jillian Phillips. I did the Biggest Loser diet. I counted my calories. I didn't count my calories. I did nothing but cabbage soup. I traveled to different experts out of state to talk to them about how I could lose weight or get to where I really, truly mattered. I consumed many medications. I set goals. I set no goals. I exceeded goals. I did not exceed goals. I had gold dresses. I had gold shorts. I had gold shirts and skirts. I took trips. I did no mirrors. I did no scale. I did no caffeine. I did only caffeine. I wore sucker inners. Does anybody ever wear sucker inners under your clothes? Those are the things that like squeeze, you know, and you can't really move, and you're like just waiting. You're just waiting to blow a rivet at any moment, right? Put out somebody's eye. So I did all of that ad infinitum. Right? I threw everything I possibly could at my inability, I thought, to control my weight. all the while being like the boy whistling in the dark, telling myself that I was working a really good program of recovery, and I was well connected with my higher power. And really what it was that once again, I had lost that connection and creeped away from it, action by action, bite by bite. I would have these warnings, you know, I would wake up and I would have these warning signals. So my higher power speaks to me in a whisper, a nudge, and a brick wall. And I have the opportunity to listen at any of those levels. And so here's the way my higher power started talking to me. It was like this. It was like, psst, Summer, Summer, Summer. This is exactly what it used to be like with alcohol. You're having a hard time stopping. You probably shouldn't start. Psst. Don't you hate yourself after what you did? And I started getting these loud ones. And these loud ones were like this. You're going to die. You're going to die if you don't stop this, Summer. This has got to end today. You're going to die. It's going to kill you. You're going to die. It's not going to be a pretty death. And you're not going to die today. You're not going to die fast. You're going to die a slow, god-awful, horrible death. This is taking your life away from you, Summer. And I would... Occasionally, I could actually hear that with my heart and in my soul. I could hear that. And I would be like, then came that resolve, that firm resolve to never do that again. To never do that again. I wasn't going to stop by the fast food joint tonight, right? I wasn't going to try to eat food in secret and hide it from my family tonight. I was going to let my kid have their birthday cake all to themselves this year. But those threadbare resolutions were just exactly that. They were threadbare. And they were lies. I had lost absolutely the ability to even be honest with myself. Because the truth was that I couldn't stop. And I would love to say that I came to that point about 2 days before I came into Overeaters Anonymous, but that's not the truth. I lived that hell for a long, long time. And then would come the threadbare idea. Well, maybe I should start counting calories again. Maybe I should join Weight Watchers. Right? Maybe if I just walk every single day. So I'll show you. So I started looking for my before pictures because, believe it or not, I had no friggin' idea that I needed to bring before pictures. And I was the type of person that if you took my picture, I was definitely hiding behind something. I've got nothing but headshots, pictures with dogs, many people, you know, behind signs, you name it, right? Like, Summer's behind the bush. We're at the park. Everybody's out, you know, trying to hide. And so I do have some before pictures. Let me see here.
There you go.
Get this to work. Yeah, that's me. That's me on the left. No, the second here.
Oh, you can do it.
What have I done?
Just do it on the computer.
No, I refuse.
Make it work.
Yeah. I'm going to do it.
Okay. Let me help you, honey.
Make it work. Okay. I don't know. So anyway, so I brought some before pictures, but I had to bring a few of them because most of them were just headshots. At the time, so when I was looking for these before pictures, I thought I could find probably pictures of evolution of, you know, some are this big, some are this small, some are this big, some are this small, because that's what I would do. You know, I would lose an incredible amount of weight, and then I would gain back incredible plus, and then I would lose incredible double plus, and I would gain back incredible triple plus, right? And so I thought, but I really wonder what I was feeling like at that time. And so I went back and read a bunch of my journals. So, yeah, so these are like basically from 2019, 17, and 16, I think. Nope, mostly 19 and 17. So this is my friend Kim ends up being beside me in these a lot. I don't know why. But when I came, when I, okay, so. In 2018, I moved to Utah. Did I start at 7? I don't even know how much time.
Okay. You're good.
In 2018, I moved to Utah, and I loved it here because you can have food delivered like you wouldn't believe. I had no idea. I had no idea. People will deliver anything you want at any time. Are you crazy? I was in the middle of grieving the loss of my dad. I was here because my kid was suicidal and was in long-term mental health care. I had just left everything that I knew. We sold our business, and we came here as refugees to have mental health care for our kids. So I had a lot of stuff going on, and I could have all the pizza, all the burgers, all the fries, all the shakes, all the, you know, like, oh my gosh, I've never eaten that kind of a taco before. You know, whatever. I can have all this food delivered, and so that's what I started to do. So at the same time, of course, those... the feelings of shame caused by my self-abandonment. Let's just call it that, right? Because every time I called, every time I picked up that DoorDash, you know, order, and I would just have them leave it on my front porch, which is pretty funny, huh? I couldn't even face the DoorDash guy. Every time I did that, I abandoned myself, right? I re-abandoned myself. I injured myself again and again and again. And those feelings of shame would come up the next day, and I would say I wasn't going to do it, and I'd be back to doing it again. And I was by myself, and I was lonely. I was the most lonely, isolated person that I knew. Because for me, this is a disease of isolation. Because what happens for me is, in order for me to practice my disease, I really can't do it with you looking at me. I really cannot do it with you looking at me. I have to get down inside of the folded up rollaway in the dark where nobody can see me practice what it takes for me to get past that feeling of shame, for me to get that 10-second whatever it is I get from that. And then the next day I really can't look at you because I can't look at me knowing what I've done. So it's a horrible, for me, disease of isolation. So I was the loneliest of the lonely. And of course, once again, my higher power is talking to me, and he's like, you need to go to Overeaters Anonymous. And I was like, no, that's for that dried up old bag in Elko. I don't want to be like her. I had known a lady in Elko that went to Overeaters Anonymous, and she was not a happy person. So it's like, you're in Salt Lake City now. I'm sure that there's OA here. You need to start going to OA. So I do my homework. I find the address. I get ready. I go, and I can't get out the door. And I say, I'm going to go tomorrow. And if I'm going to go tomorrow, I might as well eat tonight. Right? And I did that over and over. That was about 6 months of just trying to get started to get to Overeaters Anonymous. And there just came this day. You know, I would like to tell you that I got a DUI eating Big Macs, and that was the end for me. That wasn't it for me. There just came this day, and it was a day like any other day. And I woke up, it was a Saturday morning, and I woke up filled with all of that self-hatred and all of that shame and all of that, like, God level disappointment in myself and fear. And I think I heard one time that the webmaster said that the most hits on the web page are like 2 a.m. on Monday morning. Well, I was probably 2 a.m. Friday night, because I had Googled Overeaters Anonymous and found a meeting to go to. and the night before, and then I had eaten. And then I woke up the next morning, and I was like, you know, okay, I'm just going to go. I know what to do. It's even worse, I think, if you know what to do. I knew that all I had to do was get in the car and point the car. Summer, all you need to do is get in the car. Just get in the car. Just get in the car. And I remember telling my husband, I'm like running out of the house. He's like, where are you going? I'm like, I have to go to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. I got to get in the car. I got to go. I think I weighed about 237 pounds. I never weighed myself, but occasionally I was subjected to it at the physician's office. They caused me to look at my health. So I remember the highest that I weighed in about the 90 days previous to this was 237 pounds. And so I went to this Overeaters Anonymous meeting. And I've been to zillions of recovery meetings. So I thought I knew what was going on. I kind of knew what to expect, you know, went in there. Yeah. You know? With my guard up, right? But I went into this Overeaters Anonymous meeting, and there was like maybe a dozen women in this little room at this church, you know, and I sat down, and the meeting started, and everybody went around. And, you know, I'm a joiner. Everybody else said they were a compulsive overeater. I'd never really considered that, but I guess I am. I mean, I'll have to look up a couple of those words. But, hi, I'm Summer, and I'm a compulsive overeater. That's what everybody else is saying. And everybody went around the room, and I don't really remember a whole lot about that meeting. It was in October. But I do remember this. At the end of the meeting, they scared the absolute shit out of me because, sorry, they won't be cursing.
We didn't mean to.
They really scared the bejesus out of me because here is what they said to me after the meeting. First of all, they wouldn't let me just get in and get out. You know, they're like, hi, are you a newcomer? And if you knew this sweet lady, which many people do, but she was like, we'll go to coffee. Will you please come to coffee with us? We would love it for you to come to coffee with us. And I was like, oh my God. I'm caught. So basically, the shell of the nut is this. In our literature from Tradition 1. Okay, Tradition 1 in our literature reads, we compulsive overeaters have lived much of our lives in isolation. Many of us preferred to be alone so we could eat the way we wanted without interference. Even when we were surrounded by other people, it became progressively difficult for us to connect with them. As our obsession with food, body size, and eating grew, some of us felt like failures whenever we had to ask for help from anyone other than ourselves. Our desire to live free of compulsive eating has forced us to change these attitudes. Recovery began for Summer when she got out of isolation and into an OA group. Here I discovered I was not alone. As we opened our hearts to other OA members, we found acceptance, a sense of belonging, and unity with other compulsive overeaters that satisfied us in ways that food never could. Here is the only place we have found recovery from the devastating disease of compulsive overeating, and that is exactly what happened for me. The people in that room who chose to practice the tradition of unity and encircle me at a time that I insisted upon isolation, the people who refused to allow me to do that in their presence, that took the chance, that reached out their hand, that said, you're okay here, you're safe here, we speak your language, you are welcome here, as you are, with what you bring, and nothing more. That's what happened for me in that meeting. They scared the absolute hell out of me, so I went out and ate for 90 days. I couldn't come back. It scared me so badly. I thought, yes, the answer is here, and no, not right now. It became very apparent to me that there were some massive changes that needed to happen. I had been walking through my life thinking I was lean, mean, and serene. This is what I looked like on the outside.
Next slide, please.
This is what I was on the inside. I was the crypt keeper. I was absolutely, positively dried up. What happened in those 90 days? Another just normal day came. And the day came that I had decided to not eat sugar, and I hadn't eaten sugar for 2 weeks because I was going to do it on my own. And it's all about just making sure you don't eat that one red light food. I got that. So I hadn't eaten sugar for 2 weeks. I went to a friend's house. It was a birthday party, put a giant piece of chocolate cake in front of my husband and I to split. He got one bite. I got the whole rest of the piece of cake. And that cake hit my gut just like tequila used to. And I felt it hit my bloodstream, and I felt it course through my body, and I felt it fill up all those little gaps. All those little gaps that I had. All of those little teeny tiny places, and it scared me to death. And I looked at my husband and I said, that cake just hit me exactly like my old stuff used to, and I'm not willing to go back there. And I need to go back to Overeaters Anonymous tomorrow morning. My higher power always arranges this stuff to happen on Friday night. So the next day I went back to Overeaters Anonymous. That was January 26th, 2020. And I have been abstinent and working a program of recovery ever since in Overeaters Anonymous. It hasn't been easy along the way. There have been some days that really truly got on my nerves. I've been quite frazzled at times, especially the period of time that it took me between. Once again, I thought I should have had this figured out. I tell myself, this is what made me so sick, is that I should know better. When in reality, it was impossible for me to know any different. Because in my nature is to compulsively overeat. For me to be standing before you today with any level of absence is nothing less than a miracle brought only occurring by the grace of God and the program of Overeaters Anonymous. That has absolutely nothing to do with what I know. I just read you a list of what I know, right? It has everything to do with my higher power. So I made an agreement with myself when I came into this program that I would be green and that I would be a newcomer and that I would stay in a newcomer's mentality in that I need to constantly and consistently be a student. I need to learn from everyone around me and keep my eyes and ears open to every lesson that my higher power has for me. And listen for those whispers and try not to let them get to nudges. I don't even know what my next slide is, but let's go there. Let's go. Yeah. So that was me. That was me for that interview room period. Yeah, the invitation said, come as you are, and I came hungry. Next slide, let's not leave that out. There you go. So, yeah, there's some difficult days. Some very difficult days when I'm trying to be a flower. Trying to be a daisy. But people are getting on my last nerve. So, the most essential part for me about this journey in recovery has just been doing my very best to connect and be present with my higher power, because I know that that is the source. I know that I don't have a food problem today. I know I didn't have a food problem when I came in here. I had a God problem. And the God problem was this. I thought I had to bootstrap myself through everything. I thought it was up to me to take care of all of those things. I thought it was really up to me to figure out my life, to manage my life, to run my life. And today I know the difference. Today I know that if I let God figure out my life, manage my life, run my life, then everything else works out just fine to the extent that I stay out of the way and stay connected. So I've had the benefit of lots of grace and lots of mercy. Sage, one of our wise sage people, Garth Brooks, said that grace is when you do get what you don't deserve, and mercy is when you don't get what you do deserve. And I've had such benefit of receiving loads, as they say in Ireland, loads of grace and loads of mercy. I've received so much more than I ever could deserve. I fired, as a result of connecting with my higher power, I fired my inner drill sergeant. She's gone. So no longer do I live under the lash of my own inner voice that tells me, number one, that I'm not good enough. Number two, that I deserve to be punished. Number three, that I'm not doing this right. I'm not doing enough. I'm not working enough. I'm not running enough. I'm not X, Y, Z enough. So for today, that person is fired, that inner drill sergeant. And I do my very best to replace that voice with the voice of grace. And I find that voice of grace from the people around me. I'm trying to believe what people say when they tell me that I'm worthy. I'm trying to believe what people say when they sit next to me in a meeting and they talk about their story and their struggles and their triumphs and I relate. I know that that's a message for me from my higher power. But it's a daily deal. I have to check in every single day with my higher power and do everything I can to stay connected. So what I do, my daily practice, number one, I have a daily prayer and meditation practice, and I don't leave my house unless I complete this practice, because it really doesn't make any sense. It just gets horrible from there, right? It's me taking control of my life. So I have a requirement. I get up earlier to do it. My husband now joins me in prayer and meditation, which is a true blessing in our marriage and in my life. But I do it every day. And it starts when I begin to be aware in the morning that the morning has come. You know those moments when you just fit, you're sleeping and then all of a sudden your brain starts to say, hey, it's time to get up. You know, I don't know if it's little Mr. Circadian or whoever he is, but the moment that I become aware enough to know that I'm becoming aware, I show up for duty. I reach out to my higher power and I just simply say, God, I am a compulsive overeater, and without you, there is no hope for me. Please protect me from food today. Help me make good food choices. Help me have good food behaviors. I say the third step prayer. I offer myself to thee to do with me and build with me as thou will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, Lord, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness. To those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. And then when I get up out of bed, my feet hit the floor. I do a few, you know, I pee. Then I open up my books and I have prayer and meditation. I read from the big book, I read from the OA book, and I read from the biggest book of all. And I supplement that with a gratitude exchange. I have a bunch of people in my life that I exchange gratitudes with each morning. I send out three gratitudes, sometimes three strengths, and an action plan for the day. And I get that back from my friends. And many days I'm like, Summer, you can't be grateful for the birds again today. What's it going to be, Summer? Come on. Come on. It can't be your dog. Come on. You know. Every single day, I could always have the same gratitudes because I'm so grateful that I wake up free of shame. And I'm so grateful that I wake up walking in freedom. I don't think about food today. My life is not about food today. I have freedom from all of those things that I always wanted freedom from. For today. And I have a fantastic fellowship around me. And those could always be my three gratitudes. One last thing. I just wanted to... So when I was looking for these before pictures, I was curious about how I felt during these pictures, right? During these periods of time. And so I went back and I looked through some of my journals that I have. Because for a long time, I wrote those gratitudes. And so I have journals going back years and years. Oh, boy, do I have shredding to do. But I went back through some of my journals just to see, you know, okay, how long was it that I was really doing this food battle? Like, do I really think that I was battling food that long? Do I really think that I was mired in that shit and shame for that long? I mean, let's just see what those journals say, the tale of the tape, right? And I found this most interesting journal entry. Next slide. There we go. Dated 4/22/16, and it says, "Hello, physical vitality and health. This was a period of time that I decided I was going to start a liquid diet and walk 5 miles a day. Hello, physical vitality and health. I used to have you in my life, and I took you for granted. What I appreciated most about you was being energetic or more energetic, having less fear, being proud of my abilities, feeling capable of trying new things, shopping anywhere for clothes, and being pain-free. I'm determined to get you back, and when I do, I won't take you for granted ever again. I love you." I believe that that was my prayer to my higher power. I think that that was me reaching out. And I believe that my higher power heard that. I think he was like, "Oh, Summer, you silly fool. You are determined. Well, aren't you cute?" He's probably like, "Erica, look, she's determined again. Oh, so cute. So cute." But I think he heard my prayer. Because today I stand before you, I'm energetic or more energetic. I have far less fear. I'm proud of my abilities and I feel capable of trying new things, like telling my story in front of a bunch of overeaters. I feel like I can shop anywhere for clothes and I am pain-free, but the operative word there is free. And I think I'm going to end with that. Thank you very much for carrying your hearts and your souls into this room. Thank you very much for what you do for the program of Overeaters Anonymous. And remember that in each of your meetings every day, there's somebody just like me that really needs to see that first tradition in action, exemplified by a group of sweet little ladies that would never let me go. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I told you, right? Oh.
Oh my goodness. I gotta take that in. I just gotta take that in. Super grateful to be a part of that Saturday morning meeting. Super grateful to witness Summer's journey. And it gives me so much hope. What I heard just gives me so much hope. I do want to say I'm Marla. I'm a compulsive eater.
I'm Marla.
I'm also a bulimic, which I don't say often enough, but September of 1985 was the last time I tried to kill myself that way. And believe me, I was killing myself. And Overeaters Anonymous is home for me. It's the only place for me. And my hope and desire for you guys being at this convention this weekend is that whether you're struggling or soaring, whether you're brand new or an old timer or anywhere in between, that you will receive what you need right now. The OA doesn't work for everybody, but it works for me. And it works for a lot of us in this room. And when we chose the theme Soaring into Recovery, there's a very distinct energy with that, right? Quite different from struggling and stuck and crawling and burying myself. And so tomorrow we're going to have a lot of fun because in this big room we'll be going through promises. That was one of the things that came out of the magic car ride with Mike and Vicki and Shelley and I. We started asking ourselves, what would soaring into recovery look like and feel like? And I actually want you to take that question into tonight with yourself. What would soaring into recovery look like and feel like and be like for you? And then tomorrow in this big room, we're going to go through the promises, but these are the promises out of the big book, the Step 9 promises, and you're going to get to hear from people and explore for yourself that question and get to hear about how the promises do come to life in Overeaters Anonymous. So believe it or not, we're early. How's that? I'm thinking that some of you are a little bit tired. I'm seeing some drag going on there. Granted, our beautiful Ginny did. She is, you know, East Coast time. She's here. So give her a big hand for that amazing time. And so what I would like to do at this point in time is just go ahead and close down for tonight. We are going to circle up around the room. We are going to do the OA Promises Prayer. Now, in your folder that everybody got, you'll see that yellow piece of paper that Amanda did for us that has all the promises. Which reminds me, oh my gosh, would all the volunteers for this convention that are helping, will you please stand up, every single one of you. Stand up. Thank you. Thank you. And there's even more than that, because that's how it happens. So in that, on that yellow sheet, you're going to see, the, I think it's the last one. It's the I Put My Hand in Yours. If you don't know that by heart and you need that with you, please take that yellow sheet of paper with you. Let's go ahead and circle up. Oh, and then Celia, one more. There is an OA meeting after this. We would love to have you come. It's going to be in the small room across the hall. Celia is leading it.
Thank you.
And I'm just going to say right now, if you get more people than will fit in there, just bring them all over here, okay?
Tomorrow,
yes. Oh, well, we were going to announce
it
tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was prepared.
Yes, there's a raffle for cash. And there'll be literature on sale tomorrow and lots of other fun things. So please do come back. I hope we don't scare you off. Okay?
Wow, look at this one. Pause for the still suffering compulsive eater.
I put my hand in yours. And together we can do what we can never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon on our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams.
Keep coming back. It works when you work it, and you're worth it.
Adrenaline.
I guess
that's the word. Adrenaline. It just kicks in. Yeah. But we did it.
The line was great.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. Thank you. So we will have the OA meeting starting in 15 minutes. So at 8:40, we will start the OA meeting. Okay?
That's enough.
We can't do any more.
I am past my bedroom.
Turning into a pumpkin.